Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity. Peculiarity. Irregularity. Inconsistency. Incongruity. A rarity.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. Is that what I'm supposed to say?
Yes. This is a special edition of Anomaly. We are at Austin Comic Con. We're at our booth right now. It's the end of the day.
End of the day. Mm-hmm. First day, Friday.
Yes.
And we're all matching.
We are.
We are. It's adorable and weird.
We have Casey with us.
Hi. And Jim.
And Jim, Angela's husband, the voice of Anomaly.
Hola.
And we just came from a panel that we want to tell you about. We recorded and we'll be putting it up tonight for you to hear, and that will follow this little introduction. We saw Marina Sirtis and Gates McFadden, and they talked about women in sci-fi, kind of, sort of.
They did really a Q&A.
Q&A, kind of their experience on the show and how they brought, you know, part of themselves to the characters, and
yes,
they made a lot of jokes and made us all laugh, and
they were funny,
and we've decided that Marina's a little bit like you,
a little bit, yes,
and Gates is a little like me.
I think that is very accurate.
Yeah, the dynamic.
The dynamic is very accurate, and like, if I didn't think I was like her before, which I kind of did, I now know that real Marina Sirtis is even more like me than Counselor Troy, which is even better because she's so cool and hilarious and funny, and she
and modest. Wait, who are we talking about?
That's right. I'm cool and hilarious and funny too. No, she was great, and I got the opportunity to answer a question. I am so tired. I'm sorry. We've been here for a long time. I got the opportunity to ask a question to the panel, and I got right in under the wire because I think the girl after me was the last one, and it was just great. The only thing was right before I went, the girl who asked the question in front of me asked like a really good question, and they answered really, it made me a little emotional because it was just about them being role models for women, and not in a super duper feminist way, but just in an honest way, just being a role model. And what Marina Sirtis talked about that I got emotional about was she basically said the theme of Anomaly. She said what I wanted to do was prove that I could be a pretty girl and be smart and contribute. And I'm like, that's what Anomaly is. And I, of course, I didn't say that because that would have taken way too long. But because I was so moved, right before I asked my question, I did tell them, and you'll hear in the panel, I did tell them how much they mean to us, and I hope that I speak for all of us.
You do, because I was so happy just to be in the same room with them, I could not approach the microphone, so I appreciate the fact that you did it for me. and as a side note, you bought me a photo op with Gates, which is like a sign of how good a friend you really are.
The thing is, I'm horrible at gift giving. So when I come up with a good gift, I just go for it, because for about, for the next 6 years, now I don't have to get anything for them.
That is true. I am set for life. I'm very happy. And I have my, I'm so excited face on, you know, in the photo.
You controlled it. Yeah. I also got a photo op too, but it has nothing to do with this. We'll talk about that panel in a different.
But one of the things that, Casey, you can probably speak to this too, they brought up some of the issues that Gates had with the writers.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how they treated her
and because
Marina,
it's been so
because
long,
they were women on the show, all they were concerned about was what they looked like. Mm-hmm. And Gates was saying just how she had this wonder boy who solved all the problems on the ship, and yet, you know, a little of herself was probably in that wonder boy. And why didn't she ever have an opportunity to solve a problem that involved the ship? And I just thought that was a really good point. And it answered a question that Sue brought up as to why, that she left.
Yeah, I can't recall anything just because I'm so tired. I've been up since God knows when. But it was just a really fascinating panel to be at and to get their points of view on the show, and not only what the show means to them, but what it was like to be on the show and the politics that surrounded you know, them being actresses in the business. It was very eye-opening, and they even had one or two actresses to ask them questions about how to get into the business. And I think Marina said it's very hard once you're pigeonholed to, you know, be a comedy actor.
I hated hearing that because I just love her so much, and I feel like she has kind of become a victim of that, because it's like I just can't imagine that there's not someone out there who would know that. Just give her a damn part. I mean, people will come see it. Just give her a damn part. Let her play the Greek tragedies. That was cool for me. I don't know about you, Casey. As a theater student, one of my favorite things was just the beginning when they were talking about the theater that they were doing, or the Gates especially. I guess she's just been in. And we've talked about this before with TNG, that it's just the whole cast of TNG specifically is just all like drama. They're like students of acting, of the theater, the church of the theater. But I love that. And it was funny to me because the question that I ask about that, I wish that she wasn't as tired, because I think that's really what she probably would have said, is she's definitely a theater geek. But anyway, that was one of my favorite parts, is just listening to them talk about how much they love classics. Yeah. So, yeah, that was cool to me.
I'm surprised Marina Sirtis didn't bring up that she would like to play Lady Macbeth, because I think she would be so good.
She would be so good. But Medea would be awesome for her, too.
Yeah.
I've been part of Medea before, and she would make an awesome Medea. Awesome. Yes. So go ahead. I did not ask Marina if she remembered me from, like 20 years ago when I gave her my picture. But maybe if I go to the autograph line tomorrow, I'll ask her. Maybe.
That would be awesome. And if you don't know what we're talking about, there's an episode in our archive called Celebrity Geeky...
Geeky Celebrity Encounters.
Yeah. And Angela actually gave her an autographed picture of herself.
Did we talk about this? She talked about
Sub Rosa. No, I was getting to that. Yeah. What was so awesome is right before Angela asked her question... She Gates or another
somehow
they got onto the subject of Sub Rosa, and we nailed that when we did our episode on we did a series, and we're still working on it, but The Worst of Trek, we picked Sub Rosa, and we picked on it relentlessly, not because we hate Star Trek, but because come on, there's got to be some bad episodes, and Gates agreed and thought it was ridiculous that all of her family members were in love with this entity who lived in a lamp, and she talked about it on the podcast, and we just felt vindicated.
Yes, we were like, and it's on the recording, because I was like, oh yes, I remember that episode. So that was for all of y'all. So
indeed,
yes.
Yeah. That's all
we're
got.
We're tired,
and we I've been up for a long time. Also, I think I got 2 hours of sleep.
There's no sunlight in here, so I have no... You could tell me.
No concept of time.
I have no concept of time, so I'm a little wonky. And I'd like another drink.
And so before we play this panel, we would just like to invite you over to Austin Comic Con to our booth. We're in the fan group section. Our table number is 2602. And we would love to see you. So if you're in the area and you're coming to the con, please swing by and see us. And enjoy the panel. We will see you later. For comments, please email anomalypodcast@girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z @gmail.com. And swing by our website at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Bye. We'll see you later.
Bye. There'll be more caffeinated tomorrow.
Let's hit the mic.
Let's hit the mic. We've got a microphone here, guys.
Sure. Is anybody coming to LA in the next week? No? Maybe? Come to the Getty Villa. I'm playing in 3 plays that are at the Getty Villa, and one of the parts is Clytemnestra, but they're new plays. They're not the old Clytemnestra, but they're interesting. If you're at the Grand Getty Villa, is a gorgeous place to visit. It is really cool if you've never been.
The one in Malibu?
Yeah. It's really cool, and so anyway, if you come, let me know.
Very cool. Oh, come on, guys, no one's got questions. Come on.
go, Jenny.
There we go.
I don't have
okay.
Find something.
So, all the characters of the Next Generation, do y'all keep in contact at all with each other? Are y'all, like, still close friends or anything after working on the show for so long?
Yes. we are actually, I have to say, I'm going to diss the other show as well I'm here, because TNG is not the best of all. we are actually the only cast of all the Star Trek incarnations that the whole cast really loved each other, and we still do, and we're all still best friends, and we see each other a lot.
Except Marina moved away the hell away.
I mean, I moved to the beach, yes. Yeah.
And then Brent moved to Melbourne. I mean, really, you know, when we were all in Hollywood, it was easier.
Okay? It was easier. You know? It was easier. When we were all in Hollywood together, it was easier. We all used to have, nearly all of us used to have the same zip code.
Yeah,
remember?
That's true.
Yeah, 90068.
Yeah. Of course, that was just our trailers at Paramount.
No, that was 90062.
I got it.
Okay. But anyway, so no, we are still really good friends. We really adore each other. And yes, I mean, in the other cast, you've got groups of people, like, you know, the Voyager boys get together sometimes, and, you know, there are certain pockets of...
I like to get together with the Voyager
boys. The Voyager boys. Nah. Anyway. actually, that sounds like a good series, Gates Writing.
Well, I just give them their physicals every year, that's all.
So, Gates, I'm sensing. Wait a minute, I'm sensing this question is for Gates. I'm sensing this question is for Gates. No. Is it for Gates?
What?
Is your question for Gates?
No, it's for both of you.
Oh, it's for both of you.
Yeah, you know, it's getting rusty.
Thank you so much for coming to Texas, first of all. And I just want to ask you guys, what are your pet peeves in a social setting or whatever?
My pet peeve, Romney Ryan at the moment. I'm surprised, actually, because, you know, when I was in Atlanta, and LeVar told me off for getting political in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was like, if there's one place I need to get political, it's in Atlanta, Georgia. But I was surprised at the response here in Austin, this little island of sanity in Texas.
Still mean a great deal to you. I'm trying to get the PR people to let me get interviews with you lovely ladies. So please put in a good word for me.
I will indeed. That's a great question, actually. I think there are two plays three, that stand out for me. When I was young, in New York. Cloud Nine, the Tommy Toon production, Carol Churchill cast me, which was so thrilling because I admired her as a writer so much. And it was my first really big job in New York. And it was an amazing role. Tommy Toon was an amazing director. And to sort of do this thing where you play three different characters, I had this incredible journey. I played a young character, a middle-aged character, and then an older woman. And it was just beautiful, beautiful experience and beautiful writing. I also feel that the play that got my Equity card actually was James Lapine, who's directed Brent in Sunday in the Park. He actually cast me. I knew him from before when I was teaching at different theater conservatories. And James said, hey, you know, come on, will you be in Midsummer Night's Dream and just play one of the fairies? Because, you know, you move and blah, blah, blah. But actually, he said, actually, would you audition for Hippolyta? And it was between me and Diane Venora, and she had just graduated from Juilliard, and I had no credits and wasn't in the union. And he really liked what I did. He said, the producers just, you know, they don't want to cast you because you don't even have an equity card, but I will guarantee you a night as Helena in front of 2,000 people on a Saturday night if you do this. And so I did, and it was one of those miraculous nights when the lovers are fighting, like the weather changed, it dropped 20 degrees, the winds came up, they blew our skirts up over our heads, it was just amazing. And then when we're put back to sleep, it got totally calm, and it was really just a cool night, and it really made my career as an actress, because I didn't invite anyone. I didn't know anything about the business, but there were agents that were in the audience, and I got asked by like a bunch of people to sign, and that's how the whole thing started for me. So it was something very dear to my heart. And the other one was a Pinter play, The Homecoming, that I also did in New York, and that was just one of my favorite parts I've ever done. So there you go.
Well, when I left drama school, I was going to be the next great, you know, classical actress. And then I ended up on this space show. And that kind of was on hold for a bit. Because I wanted to be Judi Dench when I left drama school. That's who I wanted to be. I wanted to be Judi Dench.
We still want to be.
Yeah, I still want to be Judi Dench, yeah. So I actually haven't played the parts that I've always dreamt about playing. So I have my little wish list. I mean, all the parts that I dream about playing, they're all in the theater. It's none of them are going to be movies. I mean, that's, and I think Gates would agree that if we could earn as much money doing theater as we can making movies, we'd never make another movie, right? It's because that's what we love doing. But no, there are parts, I mean, there are some of the parts I'm too old to play now, so, you know, I'm never going to play Juliet. I'm never going to play, you know, one of the lovers in Midsummer. But I would like to play Medea. I would like to play Clytemnestra. I would like to, the Greek ones. Obviously, the Greek tragedies appeal to me greatly. But no, also, you know, I'd like to play, I'm a bit old in the tooth, but I would like to play Nora and in Doll's House, or I would like to play Hedda. Again, a little old, but I could pull it off. So, you know, I mean, when I was 40, I played a 28-year-old on stage, and I used to try to make the line funny, because I would say, you know, I'm 28, ha, 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 ha. And the director said, Doug, why are you doing that? On stage, you look young. I went, oh, great. So I think I could knock a few years off on stage, but no, my heart is in the theater, and unfortunately, there are very, Gates is one of the few companies that have any modicum of respect in Los Angeles.
No, there's actually, you know, I mean, I think that was true when we were doing Star Trek. There actually is quite an amazing group. There's so many New York actors that come out, and there really are some phenomenal theaters now. I was blown away, really, when I started to get involved with it. All the people I knew in New York are all doing the theaters in L.A.
But you don't get paid.
You don't get paid much, that's for sure. But you do get, it does lead to other work.
You get your gas money.
No, listen, one of my actors just got a big gig on TV.
Yeah, but you didn't get paid for working in your theater.
No, you get paid, but not enough. But I give a lot of autographed pictures to people who never have seen Star Trek. You go, what is this? I mean,
those autographed pictures.
Yes. Well, we're going to get Marina in there sometime. We've got to find the right part.
Don't hold your breath, guys. So, and I'm not talking about hold your breath, it's finding a part for, you know, an obnoxious, loudmouth English Greek woman. Yeah. Yes.
I write a feminist column for a UT paper, and I wanted to ask you guys, obviously kind of pioneers of women's roles in geek culture, how that climate has kind of changed over the course of time and what you see as the current attitude toward women in geek culture particularly.
Well, you know, geek culture is different, because I think geek culture is pretty equal. I think, you know, if you're a geek, it doesn't matter if you're male or female or animal, fauna, flora, whatever you are, you know. But I think in regular culture, I have to say, I'm a feminist, and Gates and I are of the generation that feminism was invented. So I actually now feel quite disheartened at what is happening. As far as especially young women are concerned, when I see a lot of young women, and when like especially in Los Angeles, and maybe it's just Los Angeles, I'm hoping it's just Los Angeles. You ask young women, you know, what do you want to be when you get grow up? And they say, I want to be famous. I want to be on a reality show. I want to be famous. I'm like, if you go to Oprah school in Africa, not one girl is going to say, I want to be famous. They're going to say, I want to be an engineer. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. And this whole, we seem to be going backwards now, where it's becoming all about how you look again and not about who you are. And as an older woman who lived through the 60s and the 70s and the burnings of the bras and all that stuff, I'm actually quite discouraged at the direction that our younger girls are going in.
I want to disagree with that.
Okay.
because actually, I've taught for 40 years. And I've taught people who are anywhere from 18 to, you know, 30, I guess. And but mainly 18 to 22-year-olds. And I actually feel really excited. I think it's totally pockets. It's our culture. I don't think, you could ask as many guys and they want to be on a reality show as women. I think just in general, I think we're getting pretty savvy that we know that everything is photoshopped and all of this and that. Everyone does it themselves on their own Photoshop. I think we've gotten to the point where it's a bit like the gladiators watching reality show. That's something that has more to do with our culture, I think, than women. I think, yes, as the young girls are pushed to, you know, wear bras when they're 8 and do all kinds of stuff like that, yes, that's true. And I'm very concerned about things like abortion rights and things that people, and equal pay. I think that's really, really important. And we have not made enough progress. But I feel that actually the young people who I run into are pretty freaking amazing. And I really mean that. I'm in an academic situation, and so that is different, I know. But those people are gonna be our leaders, and I really feel that they can do so many more things than I could at that age. I mean, they're making their own films, they're acting, they're knowing how to do Photoshop and doing this, they're setting up websites. And of course, it's because our whole society is about marketing. It's how do you market yourself? It's all about that, you know, popularity, who has the best website. But hopefully, it's you know, we're in this transition. I do believe that there's a lot of tremendous creativity and a lot of caring, and people are getting more. I mean, I have a son who's 21, and when he went to school, yeah, it's a mixture of things, just like life is a mixture. But he was learning about the environment, for example, in ways that I never did growing up, and he's very conscious of it. He's actually conscious. He learned, you know, he's watched all those cooking shows, you know, and he's actually a freaking amazing cook, you know. I mean, he'll do placement on a plate, and that's not his, you know, choice of work. But that's just what he likes to do. So I'm like, wow, that's like kind of cool, you know? My brother didn't know how to do stuff like that or didn't want to. So in a way, I feel I'm seeing personally, and I'm not all over the country, but I'm seeing that there are guys who are actually allowing their femme side to happen, and it's not seen as a bad thing. And there's girls who are seeing a tougher side, and that's not seen as a bad thing. And you know, a lot of, like my students in the theater, I mean, they always looked like hell, all of them, because they were so damn tired. but I think that we all have to be cognizant that, we might lose some of these privileges if we don't vote correctly. And I'm certainly an Obama supporter, and I'm very concerned about equal pay and that we all have to learn how to give back a little bit more. I think we are, as a society, not just women, we need to go deeper. We need to actually change, deal with ourselves a little bit more and think about what we can give back instead of what can we take or get. But you know,
it's John Kennedy, you know? It's John Paul Kennedy.
When you were talking about Greek plays, have you ever thought about Ms. McFadden producing Lysistrata? Please correct my pronunciation, but
that's right.
I think it's more important for a current audience around
this
the world.
This is a very small audience.
Yeah, it is. It's good. Well, you know, they have a great university.
Very small audience. We're very impressed with you.
Well, you know, the thing is, we do new plays, but we do we do new adaptations. We're open if somebody's doing a new treatment of it. And it, there have been some new plays that have dealt with the same themes. That happens a lot. You get Greek themes. In fact, one of the plays we were doing, the Belfast play, was he was actually basing it on a structure that you find in Greek theater, which was very tough, actually, because all the main action seemed to happen off stage, which is what happens in Greek plays. And it was tricky. He was like, that was his challenge. Does this work for an audience today? And it was tough, but it people loved it because they were very moved by the story. I know that's a great one. I think it's been done several times, and you know, write the play, send it to me. I'd love to.
And she will. She will read it. Yeah. I promise you. Will I be in it? Well,
we'll get. Yeah.
She'll pay me more than my gas fare money. I'm joking, Gates.
I have a question about Gates. What was we actually? What was it like working with Dwight Schultz?
Excuse me, she didn't work with Dwight Schultz. I worked with Dwight Schultz.
Oh, I thank you.
I worked with him more. Why are you asking her? Excuse me, I was the one he was in love with. Really? Which Star Trek have you been watching?
That is a riot. I'll just kind of pretend. So anyway, maybe you're talking about Genesis, right? Yes.
Yes,
where
I
directed him as a spider, and he was amazing, amazing. He was so game for doing this horrible costume makeup that took forever.
Excuse me.
It did for everybody. You're in one of us, you know.
I know.
And he was great. And you know, we wanted to do the shot having him drop down. That would have been so scary and wonderful because we could have, you know, have him come out as a spider on the top and he was game, but they wouldn't let us because we were running behind. And so he had to pop up this way, which was like, you know, that was lame. But I really, he looked creepy good, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
The artist I came in when I was wet. Most of the time.
Yeah, I have a question for Marie about Demona.
Oh, thank you, yes.
How did you get into that role, exactly?
I actually auditioned. I originally auditioned for Alyssa, the part of the female police person. And after I read the copy, they said, you know, there's another part that we think you'd be more right for, but we don't have a copy with us today. Would you come back tomorrow? And they gave me Demona. And when I got the job and we started recording, I actually asked Greg and Jamie, the director and producer, I'd actually asked them, now, you know, who else did you read for this part? And they said, well, we had you in first, and then once we heard you, that was it. You were just so evil, we didn't think we'd find anyone. Which I decided to take as a compliment. But yeah, it was kind of weird. But then it ended up with so many of us in it over the weeks. It was really fun. I don't know if you know how animation works, but these days, usually what happens is you go into a booth on your own and you record your dialogue, and it's really boring, in my opinion. But for Gargoyles, they actually did it like a radio play. We were all in the room together, and it was so much fun because we laughed and, you know, you could actually act with somebody, you know, and it was much better. I don't know why they do this single thing now, because it's like the opposite of what acting is.
Because you're not.
Yeah, they do. I don't know why they do it. It doesn't make sense to me, which is why I don't do a lot of voice acting.
I have one more question about voice acting. What was like working with Seth MacFarlane?
Did I work with Seth MacFarlane? Oh, yeah, on Family Guy.
Yeah, on Family Guy.
Playroom is their studio, and there's like all these games and everything, and they had One of the guys there, I sold my pinball machine to him. He was like over the moon. And
so she was actually, you know, working the room.
No. But anyway, and then I went back. I came back later for another reading of this new one that they were doing that was really fun. And
which set you all back together?
Well, no, we were
separate.
But they just are hilarious. And when I was there, just as an observer, when Seth was reading the new script, he does so many parts, you guys.
Yes.
I know.
He is amazing. Yeah. And of all the people, he's just like changing characters. He's so brilliant, it's amazing.
Is it Seth that does the Cleveland show as well?
Yes.
Okay, so I've worked with him twice. Yeah. And I am so effing old, honestly. But no, I did a thing called the Cleveland show as well. They wanted a Greek prostitute. It was me and Ariana Huffington. but that was fun. But we did a table read. That was why it was fun, because we actually did a table read and you got to meet everybody.
I have a question. Did it?
You've got a lot of questions.
This is my last one.
Okay, all right.
I really feel sorry for Denise Crosby. She got killed in series one and she got killed again in the Family Guy episode.
You know why?
Why?
We like killing Denise.
Disagree again. I love Denise.
We love Denise, but we just like killing her a lot.
She also did a fantastic part. I directed her last year and in a play called House of Gold. And we got a lot of nominations for the play that in something that's going to be happening on November 12th. Very exciting. She did not, but she played a mean character, and I put her in a red wig, and it was like very funny because she was channeling Dr. Crusher. It was an old Dr. Crusher wig I had. But she's great.
Dr. Crusher.
They gave them to me. They said that, you know, they're not going to fit. I have like a huge head, you know. So they said they're not going to fit well.
They all look brain.
I know.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much for being here and honoring the 25th anniversary with all of us. It's really great. So I wanted to ask you, what in your role in Star Trek was really important to you as feminists and as strong women to take from, you know, you're reading your lines and everything, but what was important for you to bring of yourselves as those roles, as, you know, women in 400 years? What did you want to see come out in Star Trek?
Well, you have to remember that we were shooting a show about the 24th century in the 20th century. Yeah. So you have to bear that in mind, right? So my thing was, because to be honest, I don't know about Gates' experience with the producers, but I never got an acting note, ever. I would get a call from the producer. Did you change your lipstick? Have you done something different with your hair? Right? So for the boys in the office, it was all about how I looked. And I knew that from the get-go. So being as I am, you know, very women's living, as we used to call it in my day, I wanted to portray that you could be an attractive woman and still be a strong person. That usually when women are strong, outspoken, whatever, on TV and film, they're usually witches with a B, right? So for me, it was really important that there was someone in a position of power and authority and obviously respect who also cared about her appearance, because that is me. That's me. I care about my appearance, but I also care more about society and politics and the world. So I don't think the two are exclusive, and that's what I wanted to show.
I just basically wanted to look good. You know, and it was like, you know, I had as many wigs as I could. And actually, as most of you probably know, I mean, I got let go because I was a feminist. So the second season, I wasn't there because I disagreed with the writer. I felt that he was writing the character of Crusher. I had said to him, I said, you know, can we just talk about why is it that if I've raised this kid on my own, and he might be obnoxious about it, but he has saved the ship about six times. And there have to be some of those genes that are Beverly Crushers, so why is it every time anything with any wisdom is said, it's a male character who talks to him, and it's only me that is only about the mothering, which, believe me, mothering is like, that's number one, just love him, no problem with that. But what about a little bit, like maybe one time I could, you know, because I thought that had not been really portrayed on a TV show, really, where, and I have a son, and there, you know, we actually talk about our, we have a whole other disconnect sometimes where it's just talking about things, and it's not to do with, oh, you're mom and you're my son and pick up your clothes or whatever. We do those too, but, and basically we disagreed, and I was asked to, you know, go, and so I certainly did it, and it's not that I was trying to be, I wasn't trying to be strident, I was used to working like in theater departments where everybody respected everybody, and you basically did talk about things, and you could talk about script things that didn't mean you were going to get your way. It's like what happens right now in rehearsals. I can be directing something, and I can have four actors saying completely different things, really arguing about it, and I don't take it personally. It's like they're arguing for their character. I mean, that's makes sense to me, you know. But anyway, so yeah. But I did really just want to look good, but it didn't work out.
That's what I meant about doing a 24th century show in the 20th century, kind of in a nutshell.
Did that change and get better when Jerry Taylor came in and she tried to write you guys?
Well, it's interesting though. I loved Jerry, but what was the episode that she wrote about me in that seventh season? It turns out my whole, the family of Beverly Crusher, we've all been in love with a lamb. Like, where did that work in with Jack Crusher? It's like, honey, let me just go turn on the light and read for a while, I'll be back, you know? It was so much fun to be out of my uniform, don't get me wrong. It was really, yeah, he was inside the lamb. He was like inside the lamb, you know? And I was like reading this going, this woman became a doctor and she's been in love with a lamp? I mean, what?
You made out with the lamp.
Yeah, I did. And I made out with a lot of weird essences. You know, I was, let's talk about this for a minute. I was 7 months pregnant, or no,
was
8 months
pregnant.
No, that was the other one that I got to have. So I'm in love with this thing that I take out of, you know, the trill thing. And I think it's a house. I mean, they've been putting me behind Mack trucks when they were shooting things. And, you know, it's like, finally, Beverly gets an episode that's romantic, and I'm 8 months pregnant. I mean, I'm like, great, okay. And the actor, who I know, actually, he looked at me and he said, are you kidding me? We're not going to do too many makeup scenes, so anyway.
I don't remember the lamp.
I'll tell you, I'll introduce you sometime, you'll love it.
I wasn't in that one very much, was I?
Yeah,
no, I definitely remember that episode. I apologize. I came up with a very light question, but after her question, I just have to use this moment to tell you how much your characters mean to me, and I know a lot of us. And I feel so silly, but since I'm here, I may never get that opportunity again. Thank you so much.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
But my light question is, obviously I'm here. I can't speak for everyone because Star Trek is something that just makes me happy, excited, all these things. I geek out about it. And so I was wondering for the two of you, what do you geek out about?
Soccer.
No, wait. How many people do you know who have the emblem of their soccer team tattooed on their body? I know exactly how you get when you meet me. Because I get like that around footballers. Right? Because I go stupid. I was at a convention in England, and they say everyone knows in fandom, in Star Trekdom, that I'm a big football fan. And the promoters came up and they said, Marina, we got some footballers coming. And I thought, and they were like, I said, who's coming? And they were like, oh, Martin Peters is coming. So tell me when he gets here. So about an hour later, someone came, Martin Peters is here. And I went, okay, I had like 300 people stand in front of me. I'll be right back. I did. I went, I pushed in. I have to say, I cut in the line because he had quite a long line too. But I was like, oh my God, Could I have a picture of Martin in his Spurs kit, please? And I gave him a picture. Martin, could you sign that to Marina? And he was like, hi. And I used to be one of the girls that used to hang around the gates of the ground. And he looked up at me and he went, I think I would have remembered you. I mean, I look different then. Because I was a very ugly child. So anyway, so I totally get it. I totally freak out about football. I'm already getting nervous about the game on Sunday. That's how for now. So that's what I geek out about. Gates.
I've had 3.5 hours sleep, so when you ask me a question that I actually have to think too hard about, I come up with like zero. Okay, that's the story.
She'll answer tomorrow.
All right. Hey. So, as an actress personally, I've been working in dramatic plays for like X amount of years, and I personally want to ask both of you, this is a two-part question. Sorry. How do I break into, because I just got a role as a comedic actor, how do I break into that? What should I...
Comedy into comedy?
Comedy from drama from 10 years.
You're asking the wrong person here.
You're a
actually,
person.
Once you get pigeonholed, do you know how hard it is for me to be even seen for a comedy?
That's my problem. I've been doing drama for X amount of years, and I finally, someone thought it was funny, and I have no idea why.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, look. Go get your friends that you went to drama school with. Get one of the people who was in a film department in Austin. Get, you know, what you guys can make your own stuff now. Do you know how amazing that is? I mean, you have access to using these little phone cameras. It's fascinating, it's interesting. You can do something funny and put it on YouTube. You know how cool that is? I mean, you know, I geek out on, I'm on YouTube whenever I can, because I mean, there's such a world out there, it's unbelievable, right? And it's just fascinating. You can do something and you just start to do your own stuff. Again, look for something. Don't wait for someone to come up and say, hey, I want you to play this fabulous, yeah, brilliant comedy part. It's just, you know, start to write stuff about what's funny in your life, what's funny to you, and just start, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I play more of a physical theater, like Puritan role over in California. So
find theater companies that do love that. Actors Gang, yeah. The Tim Robbins Group in LA does a lot of that kind of physical comedy. And it's, you know, it's out there. You got it, but you really have to want it. You really have to do it, because it ain't going to come easy, and it's not going to, you know.
No one gets discovered in Schwab's drugstore anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
You can't even find the drugstore.
As women...
Well, the drugstore's not there anymore. That's another reason. But anyway.
As women who entered this Star Trek, which was primarily on, all focused on male-generated roles, how did you guys come to cement your actual characters?
But the thing that I've told, that this is an old story now, but when I came to audition, it was just sort of on flying by. I was ready to go back to New York because I was doing something there. And there were three parts on the table. They had not yet seen any women yet. My agent happened to be a fanatical Star Trek fan. I did not know the first series. So she was like, you have got to, if anything you do, go up for this. You know, it's gonna be huge. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And walked in and there were the three parts. And I said, which one, you know, did you want to see before? They said, just pick a part. And I said, which one's the funniest? And that is the truth. I said, which one's the funniest? And she said, well, Beverly Crusher has a very funny scene here. It was the only funny scene in 7 years. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, a little bit of a bait and switch there. But, you know, just, you know, go for it.
Me here.
Mm-hmm. And if last, this is going to be our last question, sorry. Oh.
First and foremost, I want to say thank you for creating two iconic characters that we have grown to love over the years.
Thank you.
Characters, and they've given us girls something to look up to in the sci-fi verse, where it's filled with a lot of men. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, sure.
Secondly, to you, Marina, thank you for teaching us how to eat chocolate the correct way.
I'm sorry, I'll give you a little chocolate. I hate dark chocolate. I can't eat it, right? It's too sickly. And I have only ever liked dark chocolate, even as a kid. The only way my mom could get me to drink my milk, which is why I'm so short, was she would break up dark chocolate into the, you know, and I would have to drink the milk to get to the chocolate, right? Now, if I had, bearing in mind, I got at least two or three times a year a call from one of the suits upstairs saying things like, do you want the good news or the bad news? And I was like, the good news is your work rest today was great. The bad news is you look fat. Right? So, and then they want me to eat chocolate. This is Hollywood for you, right? So what I would do, I would make them give me milk chocolate. And as soon as the scene was over, I would spit it into a bucket at my feet. You're looking at that's too much information. But that was the only way I could do it and fit into the like, into the spandex space suit. But no, I mean, the time I had to eat the chocolate ice cream, I mean, by the time I ate it, it was chocolate soup. Really, you have to really suspend belief, you know. I mean, really enjoying this chocolate soup. But it was, thank you. I mean, I do love chocolate. I am a big chocoholic, I am. But never get me milk chocolate. I'm going to hand it to the next person in the line. Or my husband.
My question is actually to both of you. In the Star Trek verse, you have phenomenal technology, both in the medical field and in entertainment and everything. If you could take some of that technology into today's world, what would it be and why?
Well, I hate technology. I'm the opposite of Gates. I have never been to YouTube. I have never been to Facebook. I hate the whole internet thing. I'm sorry. I did Twitter for a while, one tweet a day, and it was always political. So that did, no one wanted to hear my opinions. But I actually don't like. I have a theory that it's a government plot. Me and Richard Belzer, it's a government plot to isolate us in our homes, because in the 50 years' time, no one will leave their house. And my opinion is that unless you actually get out on the streets and protest, nothing changes. I know you can hear about the demonstration on social media, but you actually have to get your ass out there on the street to protest. And in 50 years, no one is going to leave their house and the government's going to do whatever the hell it wants. That's my opinion. And that's why I hate technology, because I think it's...
I'm not on Facebook, although someone put me on Facebook.
Oh.
And but since I've been doing the theater, I've actually finally been convinced that it's a very, very important marketing tool, and you actually do need marketing tools. And you actually can, because we're all, I find everyone's overly busy, we're overwired, we have very little true communication, but we have a lot of just stuff. I mean, I basically, truly, I get 600 emails a day, and I was getting a neck ache from having to deal with it. So I find it's a burden, and I also see what's wonderful about it. If I could pick one thing from, I mean, to be able to Skype, for example, if you have a child that's in far away, it changes your life. When I went to study theater in Paris, when I was like 20, it was one of the most thrilling times of my life and also one of the most deeply lonely times, because we couldn't afford a phone call. I was like lucky if I got a $10 phone call that you had to go to the post office for and you spoke for 3 minutes. If I got that once every 3 months, that was really something. I couldn't afford to have a phone in my apartment. You basically would make plans with friends, and if someone didn't show up, you didn't know what the hell, why. They could be dead on the street. It was quite a different thing, and so it was all letter writing. And I do miss that. I've talked about this with my son. I finally talked him into writing a letter to his girlfriend once. And I said, you know, you should try it because you think more when you're writing it by hand. Doing emails, it's different. But when you actually are crafting a letter, it means something. And there's something tangible to hold. The way I used to just like, oh, you know, here's a letter. And you just keep it and you reread it. You know, you feel their handprint on it. I miss that, but on the other hand, there's so much more that can get done, and there are so many, there are many, many positive things about it. I don't know that I've learned how to, or have, that many people have learned how to just kind of keep it at bay, like know when it's good and then know when it's like time to shut it off and it's too much. There's so much information. I can't process it all. And I am happiest when I'm just doing one thing, be it reading a book, cooking, you know, I don't care if it's petting the cat, having a conversation, out, you know, working on in rehearsals. I'm over the moon when you're just doing the work or you're engaged. I find that for me, technology does interrupt my engagement sometimes. That said, I there's no going back. I think we should just start to learn how to you know, modulate it more. And if there's one thing from Star Trek, I wish we could do. I wish we could do some of the operations Dr. Crusher did to replace or any of the other doctors. I mean, to be able to do things like spine replacement and that we used to get these kids who would come on the set who were Make-A-Wish kids, and it was heartbreaking because I was playing this doctor who could have cured all of those, and there I am, and with these parents who are unbelievably noble and strong, and I'm like, I don't know if I could do what they are doing. They're like happy, the kid is like happy, and you know, he's gonna be not around in a year.
Dog might be crying.
Yeah, and so, you know, for me, that's really one thing I wish. I wish that we could do those sorts of things to be able to repair things. And I believe that we are making huge headway. I mean, there's many more cancer treatments.
Well, they're
going
to have a scan soon, like your scan.
Yeah.
You know, they're working on that. Guys, get an answering machine like I do. Then you can screen your calls. I still have an answering machine. Yeah.
I do too, but it's not my calls, it's emails. Well, when I say calls, I meant emails.
I know, you have a job that you need to do the emails. I do my emails in the morning, and then I close my computer, and it goes away until the following morning.
That sounds good to me.
And I never answer my phone.
With that personal revelation from both of you, I think that's been a great thing. Thank you guys. You guys had great questions.
You're awesome!
Woo! Come on, guys. Give it up. Woo!
Thank you!
We like stars, all the stars in the sky, especially the stars you give us on iTunes. To us, you are the biggest star in the cosmos. Go to iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks.
You can hear Anomaly on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, iPad, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You can also catch the latest episodes of our favorite shows on Stitcher. Podcasts like Take Him With You, Tales from the Mouse House, Waffle On, Upper Memory Block, Treks in Sci-Fi, Ladies of Leet, and much more.
Visit anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com.
Music